Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerd culture way too much. Today we have a very special guest, Sam Hargrave. If you don't know his name, you've almost certainly seen him and his work in some film over the last 10 years. As a stunt double, he doubled for Hugh Jackman, Chris Evans as Captain America, as well as even Justin Timberlake. He's also been a fight choreographer and stunt coordinator for some of the biggest movies of the previous decade, like three of the Hunger Games movies, a little film called Avengers Endgame, Deadpool 2, and then he directed his first movie back in April with Extraction, which starred Chris Hemsworth as well as David Harbour and was written by Joe Russo, and both of the Russo brothers produced it. And so Griffin and I got to speak with him last week for about 45 minutes, and this is one of those conversations where immediately I knew I was going to like this guy. Every question that we asked him, every answer that he gave, I was like, this guy just speaks my language. This guy thinks the way that I think. This guy is into the types of movies that I'm into. And even as he was talking about like specific movies from 35 years ago that influenced him, he was listing the same niche films that inspired me to start. So I absolutely loved getting to talk with him. He really was someone that was just right on my wavelength, which would explain probably why I like the movie Extraction so much, is that we think the same way. Actually, in processing through this interview, I was like, what was it about this guy that I liked so much? Like, back when I was growing up, I thought, wouldn't it be cool to be a stunt performer? And if I were to make a movie, I would make a movie like Extraction with that type of action, simple, straightforward plot. And so in this certain weird kind of way, he's in the process of kind of living this alternate world of what would have been a cool life in my childhood brain of what path I could have also taken. It's what he ended up doing with his life. And in doing so, like I said, he's been in all of these movies that I've loved. He's coordinated some of the most exciting action sequences that I've loved over the last decade, as well as you have. And so this was a real treat for Griffin and I get to talk with him. And with that said, let's go ahead and just get started with it.
All right. Well, I guess the natural place to start, now that the film has kind of been out for like a little bit, is I guess the success of the movie, because it's undoubtedly been a massive success, not just on Netflix, but just in terms of just like film right now. So for you as a filmmaker, what do you like, how does it make you feel, I guess, to know that like your directorial debut was like received this well by so many people around the world?
It's insane, really, because you set out to make a film and you hope that it all comes together and people enjoy it. But to see the response globally is a dream come true. It was never something that I was expecting. I'm really stoked that the positive response worldwide has been a really fun experience. It's I can't even put it into words, really. It's hard to express.
Yeah, well, and I think the interesting thing about it is, like, while I have no doubt that it would have, like, succeeded on Netflix in general, just given the star power of Chris Hemsworth and the kind of movie it is, we're kind of in that weird space right now in this time in the world where it's like it was the perfect time to drop this movie. And so, like, leading up to the release of it, did you kind of have, like, an inkling of, like, oh, you know, maybe this is actually going to play well because I guess there's really nothing else coming out at the moment?
Well, if you have to take a positive out of this crazy world situation, it was, we did kind of, we were aware of that. We were really struggling to, finish the movie, not struggling, but we knew that things were starting to be restricted and it was going to be harder for us to get to, for me at least, to and from the post house. So, we were really trying to get it finished quickly so that we could be ready for our release date on April 24th. But then, as we were seeing the landscape, noticing that we were one of the few new movies to come out during this time, we did kind of say, hey, this could be a real positive for the world, not just for the movie, because people are going to be, seeing it, but for those who were locked up in their homes and didn't have new entertainment coming in, this could be a really great way to help them escape and take their minds off of all this craziness that's going on around them that they can't control.
As a personal anecdote to that, this is the first Netflix original film I ever stayed up until 2 a.m. in the morning for when it exactly dropped. I love action movies. Griffin told me it was like I was going to love it. And so it's the first time ever both my wife and I stayed up till 4 in the morning, started at 2 a.m. Exactly to that point of like, it's like that experience of the opening night. That's what this was for me. And so it's a pretty cool little experience. And be clear, I love the movie.
Well, thanks very much. That's high praise because, I mean, you know, oftentimes, myself included, you watch things on, you know, on Netflix or they come out and you're after a full day of work and, you know, you kind of might be nodding off or what. That's the difference, right? Like you go to a cinema, it's a little bit harder because you paid your money and you've traveled there and you set up this date night or whatever it is. And now you're like, I'm staying awake. But sometimes, you know, you sit back on the couch and you start it and you fall asleep. But so that to me is one of the highest levels of praise for that platform is that you put on this movie and it's entertaining enough to keep you awake from 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. That's crazy.
And I have three kids under the age of 10. So staying up that late is not something I normally do. So and it was worth the experience. It's pretty cool. Like in this era where we can't go to the movies, this was kind of the big opening night movie that I've had over the last 2 months. And
It's been pretty cool to be able to provide that for people because I've heard, you know, similar response from others. It's kind of an event movie, which usually doesn't happen, you know, on this platform, but it's really cool that you guys got to experience it that way.
Yeah, well, and I guess kind of to that point, you know, talking about the fact that it was like, distributing it on Netflix and whatnot, and like, you know, it being like a massive event and people tuning in the way they have, I've always been curious about how the distribution method sort of affects the cadence of a film, because I have to imagine when you're going to streaming, that's going to affect how you would structure it, as opposed to if it was going to a theater, you're allowed to kind of like let scenes breathe a little bit more, whereas like now, with it going to Netflix, you kind of have to really jump straight to the point. So for you working on Extraction, knowing that it was going to Netflix, knowing that people wanted to see Chris Hemsworth, how did that affect, I guess, the editing process?
Yeah, that's a good point. We actually, shooting the movie, we didn't change our approach. We all, the filmmakers, the Russo brothers and, you know, Patrick Newell, our line producer, and Tom Siegel, our DP, and, you know, Chris acting, me directing. We all approached it as if we would any other film we were going to, you know, shoot for the cinema, because we all love cinema. That's kind of how we kind of grew up or enjoyed ingesting our stories. So we approached it with that look, even deciding the aspect ratio. Sometimes if, you know, for streaming stuff, you want to change the aspect ratio so it's not so widescreen, because sometimes people like on their TVs or phones that may be harder for them to view, but we're like, no, we want to stick to this cinematic feeling. We shot it that way. Now in the editing process, we did make a few little changes just because we're like, we know that we got to get right to it and, you know, grab people's attention. So there was a slight change in the structure of the beginning. But other than that, we tried to stay true to the DNA of the story, and we just tried to, you know, bet on audiences sticking with us when you present a story and characters that you want to follow. So, I mean, we didn't do a lot of shifting, truthfully, and it would have been, a similar movie in the cinema.
Okay. Well, I guess that's good to hear, because I would imagine that, like, you know, I guess the opening, for instance, it's like I could see you guys like either opening with him kind of like in the midst of battle to really like, you know, build intrigue, or like, you start from, I guess, the kid's point of view and whatnot, and then you kind of follow him along until you eventually meet Chris Hemsworth. And I feel like with audiences tuning in on Netflix, it's like, okay, we want to see Chris Hemsworth right off the bat, because that's why we're clicking into this movie. We want to see him, like, shooting guys up and whatnot. Yeah.
That was definitely a consideration with the opening, is because, you know, the promise of the premise is you got Chris Hemsworth with a gun, and like, if you don't give me that, I may go watch something else. So we definitely considered that in the structure, and then, you know, but I think it works, because we wouldn't, as filmmakers, we all discuss these things and never wanted to compromise the integrity of the story or the picture because of the format. And I think the cool thing about Netflix in this way is, yes, you have to be aware of that, but it does provide a platform for filmmakers to kind of stay true to the craft and say like, hey, this is filmmaking. This is the story we want you to watch. And if you know, if you don't want to, if it's not for you, you've got other options. You know, it's a very interesting, yeah. I don't know, I guess choices that you have as a filmmaker. You could say, hey, this is our movie, and be very unabashedly presentational about that.
Yeah, and I guess kind of to that point, Netflix is sort of providing like an outlet for the mid-budget action movie to kind of live. And not just action movies in general, but really like all those movies that like used to be prominent at the cinema that really, you know, are struggling nowadays. It's like Netflix is kind of providing that avenue, and it's and specifically when it, you know, as it pertains to action, up until like the John Wick films, it kind of seemed like that kind of movie, that mid-budget action movie, was like largely, you know, missing from you know, the mainstream and whatnot. And it was like kind of forced to resort to like VOD and stuff like that. So I guess do you feel like the future of this kind of like genre, not really genre, but this like size of an action movie, do you think that it's going to be in places like Netflix, or do you think that you know, because of what John Wick is doing, that these films can still survive in cinemas?
I think, I mean, that larger question of, you know, the words survive and cinema is in, yeah, this you know, current climate, is a very interesting thing to talk about. I think there's going to be a resurgence, actually, personally, of people going to cinema just because it's been denied you so long. It's like when you try to go on a diet and you're like, I'm no ice cream. What's the one thing you want so bad? And then when you get to that ice cream shop, you just eat all the Ben and Jerry's. So I think people might start going back to the cinema because they miss that communal experience. But to that question, or to the mid-range action movies or mid-range budget action films having a home on Netflix, I think definitely. And I really love the space that Netflix has created for filmmakers to present those movies that may not have in recent years found a home in the cinemas to their audiences, because people want those movies. I think that, and you can see that, I think, in the response to Extraction.
Yeah.
Our audiences who really like this kind of movie, this very kind of straightforward action movie that's a bit of a throwback to movies of the 80s and 90s, where it's, you know, you've got a kind of a torn, a broken hero, but with a very clear mission and, you know, this hard-hitting action that tells a story through that action. So I think Netflix has created a wonderful home for these movies. And gosh, I mean, if and my experience with Netflix was so positive and so rewarding that, hey, if that's where they make them, if they're the people doing it, that'd be a great place to make movies.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead. Yeah, Sean, because I know you kind of had a lot of thoughts on this, for sure.
On specifically the movie Extraction, if anyone is listening to this that hasn't seen the movie, there's just a bit of a spoiler in this, so skip ahead in the interview. But so wondered if you could give your thoughts on the final shot of the movie. Obvious, little bit of an ambiguous as to who's standing in the background. Can you give us a little bit of anything that you could expand upon that as to, was that in fact Rake standing there?
For us as filmmakers, we made that choice to, because for us, what that shot represented was hope, if you will. And then it's a bit of create your own ending or to the movie, because, you know, when you watch the movie, certain people are going to feel a certain way. Like, is it more satisfying if Rake gets his redemption through sacrifice? Some people will say yes. Others will be like, oh, no, I need him to live. That's what's going to make me hopeful. Mm-hmm. So with that ending, like we tried to be, you know, and so that's the beauty of cinema and art, is like you get to paint this picture. And then if you stare at it long enough, different people are going to see different things depending on what they bring to that, you know, piece of art. So for us, that final image, it represented hope. Whether or not you wanted to have him alive or dead, it gave both camps a satisfaction, we thought. And, you know, that was the goal of that shot. So you could take it either way. And, you know, we wanted to give people that satisfaction.
Yeah, I always like kind of looked at, because the whole movie was kind of like dealing with this this through line of like father and son dynamics across the board, not just between like Rake and the kid, but like even the you know, the kid in Dhaka, who was like kind of in the what is it, like the gangsters army or the drug lords army and whatnot. There was almost like a dynamic there. And so I kind of like, I always looked at that final shot as just being sort of like metaphorical and whatnot. And I, like the kid is going to kind of go on now that Rake has sort of like sacrificed and whatnot.
Great. Yeah, because we did. There were, and it's interesting, you mentioned the father-son dynamics. There were, for me, reading the script, very strong thematics about father-son relationships with Farhad and Asif, so on the villain side. And then kind of in the middle, you have Saju and his son that he's fighting for to save his life. And then the kind of broken relationship of Ovi with his father who's in prison, and then kind of the Rake coming in there to replace that void or fill that void. And then again, Ovi filling the void that Rake had with this loss of his son. So there was full of father-son thematics that we tried to really hit home on that. And, it's great that you took that away from that final shot.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I assume most of that came from then Joe, then, as opposed to you, or did you kind of have any contribution to that that part of the story?
I had a lot. The original story, like if you go back to Ciudad, the original screenplay and graphic novel, that character was originally a girl. He was saving a young girl. And so then what I saw when I was reading the script, and I spoke a lot with Joe and we made this decision together, but was I saw that the other relationships, were father-son. And so I thought to kind of, complete that and have a third father-son relationship is to make that, character into a boy, so that you had the father-son dynamics, and it really, with the A story, and it really kind of hit home. And then we actually, that wasn't it was a thing that we did kind of change from the original draft and we wanted to go not only the father-son dynamics and thematics, but the water theme. So bringing the kid back or from water, that was something that wasn't, that I came up with and thought, I pitched to Joe and he liked it. And so we thought it worked well. So now you're blending both of those themes, water, as a term of, cleansing and forgiveness. And there's a lot of thematics that we wove in. Who knows if people see them, great. If not, that at least we were thinking on that level, and we tried to communicate that through a lot of visual themes.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely get that, that level of thought, put into there. Like, I think it definitely comes across. But kind of shifting a little bit away from that specific part of the film, I think one of my favorite things about action filmmakers specifically is, you can often see influences or, the kind of films they're interested in outside of the action genre sort of weaved throughout their work. The first thing that comes to mind for me is, Chad Stahelski and, his love of, Asian cinema. I think that's super present in a lot of his work. And so I'm curious for you, what are the types of movies outside of this genre that influence your approach to filmmaking?
Well, outside the genre, I can mention inside the genre just real quickly, but I also was influenced by Hong Kong and Asian cinema for the kind of the action style and the longer takes and wider wider lenses and Dutch angles sometimes to follow action. But then the mixture of that with the Western action movies of the 80s and 90s, like the Die Hards and True Lies and Rambo and, those kind of things that I think have a lot of great qualities. But, outside of that, I'm drawn to stories that, I love what Del Toro did in, The Shape of Water with the thematics like that. That was something that I was really drawn to, or in Children of Men, how the camera becomes a character almost in their version of a Warner. So those were two very strong influences for me, that those directors and just the visual style that really speaks to me, of using the camera to tell a story through the lighting and the color schemes and the blocking. So it takes many years to reach the level those guys reached, but at least as a fledgling filmmaker to be inspired by them, that I took a lot of inspiration from those those inputs.
Yeah, well, and I think especially as it pertains to the one take. I mean, obviously you did that jaw dropping one in Atomic Blonde, that hallway fight scene, which is, I mean, I still go back to that, and it's just like super mind blowing what you're in for with that. But like, it's interesting that you do mention the Children of Men, because there is sort of like there. I see elements of that one are for sure incorporated into this. And so I guess when you were piecing together that particular take, because I've like listened to you explain this like numerous times, so I don't want to kind of like go gloss over that again. But what were like, I guess the things you referenced and how did you feel more comfortable doing something like this because of your work in Atomic Blonde or stuff like that?
Sure. I mean, Atomic Blonde was an amazing experience of just how that extended take can really draw the viewer deeper into the story and closer to the character through that experience, that shared experience. And so that was what I wanted to do with Extraction, was to, again, at this particular time, was to allow the audience to become a participant in the action, to where you feel what Rake's feeling in real time. And part of the thing that I loved about both of those, what Dave did with Atomic Blonde and allowed me to do with that sequence, and what Kurion did with Children of Men, was the moments between the moments, we'd call them, the pauses. It wasn't just about go, 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 go. It was the moments of stillness, like, you know, the beat where up on the roof where, and that was something we changed actually on the day. We had written all this crazy action. They get to the rooftop and then, you know, they fight some more bad guys and then they jump over the roof. So we're like, wow, this is a lot of action. What if we take one of those moments that is so powerful in Children of Men, or in Atomic Blonde, where, you know, when he, in Children of Men, where he goes up and he's walking through and he's, you know, hearing the screams and he's, here's the child, you're following that sound.
Yeah,
so it's like,
yeah.
We take a moment and pause and have a character beat where, you know, it's still high octane. It has a little more of that blend of, you know, Children of Men mixed with a line from a Die Hard movie, but where he's like, hey kid, you trust me? And the kid's like, no. And he throws him across the roof. So you get a little bit of that 80s one-liner mixed with a character moment of like the truth of, hey, do you trust me? It's like, no, but you could, you know, the subtext would be no, comma, not yet. And so then later at the end where, when after Saju gets hit by the truck, he says, come on, kid, get in. The kid has gone from, do you trust me? No, to I trust you enough to get in the car with you to trust you to save my life. So, you know, it's all for me just about the storytelling and trying to weave in those still moments so that it feels balanced. It's not just an overwhelming barrage of action.
Yeah. Oh, I love that integration of like, you're right, like the stillness and the story kind of thematics of like the Quran and the pacing of that with those classic 80s one-liners. That's great, because I didn't even think about that until you just brought it up.
Yeah,
for sure. I don't know, Sean, did you I know you wanted to ask him a little bit about like kind of like your love of like 80s action movies and stuff like that, but
right. So I mean, I grew up in the 80s and 90s when movies like this were, you mentioned them, Rambo, True Lies is one of my early memories of going to a drive-in theater. First hour was watching The Lion King and then walking over and watching True Lies. And so I just love these types of movies, and anytime one of them comes out, I'm just so excited to see it. And it seems like it's a bunch of former stuntmen transitioning to directors seems to be leading that charge. And a bunch of these movies I get excited about, whether it's the John Wick guys, Rick Roman Waugh doing Angel Has Fallen and now Extraction. Do you think that where do you think some of that comes from?
Well, I think above all else, we as directors and then, you know, stunt performers becoming directors eventually, is we're fans of action movies. And then, so above all else, that's, I think, where we come from. So if we can make movies that like the ones we enjoyed, then we're, you know, we know there's other people like us who enjoy those movies. So why not make
right
movies
here
for all of us? Yeah, exactly. So yeah, Sean's there. We got at least one fan out there. But I think coming from a stunt background or an action background, that doesn't necessarily make, you know, Chad or Dave or me or Rick like just because of an action background doesn't make you a better director for action. I think we're at the foundation of that. We bring a love of cinema. We're fans of the genre, and we're also students of film. It's not just like, because you're a stuntman, you're going to be a great director. It's like, no, there's a lot of other elements that have to be present to tell a good story. That's one of them. And it can help give you a unique lens through which you can shoot an action scene or tell a story. And so that is the one advantage. But there's so many other elements to it. But I think, at its foundation, at its core, is that we have a love for that genre and for cinema, and that we've studied it and, eat, live. We live and breathe it. It's in our DNA. Yeah. We love action.
What I think one of the things that I love about these types of movies is, as much as I love big, gigantic CGI, I mean, you can look at the posters behind me, clearly love the big CGI green screen spectacle films, but when it just goes back to stunt work, and you can tell that was a guy that just hit a thing, that's a car that is driving through an alley. There's just something about that is special. Like, I interviewed Rick Romanois, and he was talking about, all the explosions in this movie were real. I mean, maybe a small amount of CGI, but like, we really blew all that stuff up because you can feel it even in a theater when an explosion happens. And there's just something about that that's a little bit different.
Yep, agreed. And I think that's something, again, why those movies are so inspirational. And it is a throwback. That experience of feeling the explosion, of seeing Jackie Chan's stuntmen fall and hit these things on their way to the ground, and feeling that bone crunching impact, you're like, you can't replicate that yet with CG. And so to revisit that, what excited me as a filmmaker, it's just my chance to give that feeling to other, movie watchers. So, yeah, it's my chance to give back. And I think I won't speak for Chad and Dave or Rick, but I think that has a lot to do with, the inspiration of returning to a very practical style of filmmaking where it's real people performing real action with real consequences for the characters. It's something we were inspired by growing up.
Yeah, well, and I think that's what makes like movies like big blockbusters like The Winter Soldier one of the best in the MCU, just period, because it kind of incorporates both of those elements there of like that hard hitting, like mid budget action, sort of like visceral, like fight sequences, but like you're getting your comic book spectacle. And I don't know if you felt that while, working on that film, I'm obviously as Chris Evans' stunt double, but I don't know. I think there is a way that you can get the best of both worlds. It's just we don't always get it.
For sure. And that I don't disagree with you. That is one of my favorite movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe for that reason, is it is a really good blend of reality or hard-hitting action, real stunts mixed with the CGI spectacle that we kind of people expect and demand of those level movies. But I think you're right, and that's something that I've kind of always said with when it comes to shooting action in those big movies, where you can have both. You can have a really good story and you can have really well shot and edited action. It doesn't have to be one or the other. And in a way, and I'm not, again, it was one of my favorite comic book movies ever, and I'm not bagging it. I love it. But like, it's like The Dark Knight, for example. It's a great movie. Personally, there's certain things with action that I would have liked to see a little differently with Batman. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But I don't think the two have to be mutually exclusive. Like, I think you can have a great movie, a great story, great drama with great action, and then you just get everything and you can have your cake and eat it too. And I guess that's kind of what I would like to in the future films bring is, hopefully people got that with Extraction, just a good movie with a good story and with good action, bring it all together so you get to have all of your favorite things.
Would you say that The Dark Knight Rises gave you a little bit more of what you were looking for?
No. No, not at all. I think, but that's, hey, that's all we could, I mean, we could talk, I think between the three of us could talk for hours about movies like that in action and you know, sure. what we like, but that's what makes cinema so fun, I think. And so interesting yeah. and art in general, is it subjective? Like, you know, what I love about certain movies, other people might not, or what, you know, what I love or about what I would change per se about a movie like that. Some people go, what are you kidding? It's perfect. So that's what the beauty of it is. You can talk about these things afterwards, and then also to have a chance, like for me to make a movie that shows how I would like things to be seen, then I get to, mm-hmm. to do it. So I don't have to go, oh, well, if I was doing that movie, I'd change it. We're like, well, you just made a movie. So, you know, you, people now get to discuss how they would change what, you know, what you did. And that's, I think, part of the fun of it. And hopefully it can inspire people to do bigger and better action and tell better stories because of, you know, things that we've done. Like we make these movies and inspire people, hopefully, to do better.
So with the success of the movie, they've already, I guess, kind of announced a second one is coming. Are you signed on to do the second one?
Not officially, no. I mean, right now we're going through as filmmakers, and, you know, Joe is officially signed on to write another movie in this kind of Extraction universe that we've created. Where that is, you know, where that falls before or after, we don't know. We're discussing, you know. Where in this, where does it take place in this universe? Who does it involve? What's, you know, what does it all mean? But I would love to be. I had some of the most wonderful moments making this film. Is, you know, great friends that I had going into it, or we got even closer. Or new friends that I made. It was an amazing experience working with Netflix and the Russos. And would I do it again? In a heartbeat. You know, we'll see when, you know, when all of this stuff lifts and we can make movies again. We'll see, you know, what comes out of that. Screenplay.
Yeah, personally, I'd just like to see, like, other members of the Avengers get their own, like, you know, mid-budget action movie like this. Like, you know, put Paul Rudd in Extraction 2. I'd love to see that. That would be... That'd be something else.
That's a fantastic idea. I'll run that by Joe. That's amazing.
Brilliant. I love it.
Is there anything you can tease about any sorts of the ideas that are being discussed for where things might be able to go as a sequel?
Not at this time. I can just say that we had a great time making the first movie, and you know, the chance or the idea of making a second one excites all of us as filmmakers. And for now, I'll leave it at that.
Action, is there anything you'd love to be able to do if you had that potential with whatever your next project is? Is there something specific with action you would love to be able to do?
Specifically, you know, it's funny that those things a lot of times come with the story, and it depends on what, you know, what we're trying to tell and who, where the character is at the time. So I don't think there's any just specific thing that I have to do and it will go into my second movie. I think it's that I do want to do something fun. I do want to do something, you know, try to push the envelope and entertain people and make them go, oh, wow, that's a different way of seeing something like that. But what that is yet, I don't know. And, you know, that's part of the fun of the discovery process of the pre-production is, like, once you get in there, like, how can we take this story moment on the page and turn it into an action spectacle that people haven't really seen before?
Yeah, well, I think I read somewhere that you're, like, you're working with your writing partner on, like, a new original thing for your next project. Can you give us any insight into, like, kind of where you're heading with that?
Yeah, I mean, we're adapting a novel, and my Fernando Chin is my writing partner, and we've written other things in the past, admittedly not very good, but we're trying now to you know, do a little more creation on our own. You know, we're adapting a novel that's based on a really fun book that it really just kind of tells a kind of an Asian American perspective, like an Asian American coming of age story with obviously, because we're doing it, a lot of action and just hopefully a really fun character piece. But it's been a really great journey for me, you know, as a filmmaker, just really diving in more into, you know, the writing process and just, you know, developing something from the ground up has been a really fun process for me. And I hope to do more of it. You know, we'll see what people think of this pass of our screenplay.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. Cause I know you mentioned that you had kind of, like, collaborated before on, like, past small projects, but, like, just, you know, quickly looking at your IMDb, like, you did work on a lot of, like, short films, like, in the early 2000s, I guess some of your earlier years. So for you, while you were, you know, very prominent in stunt performance and whatnot, has your path always been like led to direction, or was that something that, you know, after you did a little bit of second unit directing and stunt coordination, you're like, oh wow, maybe this could be something that I would enjoy doing?
Directing was something I always wanted to do. I went to film school back in North Carolina to direct to make films. It was funny because I never really differentiated stunt work or acting or writing or directing from making a movie. It just all fell under this umbrella of we're going to make a movie. And so I learned all of it, you know, the editing side of things. And it wasn't until a friend of mine kind of broke it down. And it's funny how, you know, you could be so smart in certain ways and so oblivious and, you know, blissfully ignorant in others. I had no idea that, you know, it was broken down as like, okay, the stuntmen do the stunts and the, you know, the actors do the acting and the sound. I was like, I'll do it all. Like I gotta write it. I'm gonna set up the camera. I'm gonna say the lines. You're gonna hit me with the car and then I'm gonna edit it together. And
yeah.
So it was not until after learning all of these skills in film school and practicing those in these short films and projects that I would do with my friends that, you know, my friend Thayer Harris, who actually and wonderfully kind of full circle movie style ended up directing second unit for me on Extraction.
Oh, wow.
And I've known him since I was 14 years old and he was 15. We were doing martial arts together in North Carolina. But he was the one who was like, hey, you know, you fall down on your head pretty good. There is a career path out there for you. It's called stunts. And I was like, well, that's, you know, scratching my head. That's a pretty good idea. And so I started off into that one because I wanted I loved the physical challenge and the mental challenge of facing your fears and, you know, overcoming these obstacles and performing. I really love performing. So stunts was a great way in. It also was kind of a mirror to the path that one of my heroes, Jackie Chan, took, you know, from a stuntman to then he started acting and writing, directing, producing, and, you know, he did it all, and I just wanted to do it all as well. And so stunts seemed like a great way in to, while I was young and, you know, supple, to get out there and take some falls and do some fun things, but always with the goal to direct and tell my own stories. So I have had kind of, I won't say, you know, a dual life or like a dual identity of like, you know, stuntman by day, director by night. But it was always on my mind that I wanted to do this and to tell my own stories.
Oh, that's interesting. Go ahead. Yeah.
Mini rabbit trail there. My own journey into talking about movies on the internet started with Jackie Chan back in the late 90s. I put up my first movie webpage and it was a Jackie Chan fan webpage. And had like a picture of his body. You could click on it to see which parts he injured it. So Jackie Chan influenced both of us in our own little ways. But yeah, I used to like trade.
That's amazing.
Because back in the day, it was obviously difficult to get his actual Asian films. And so I was in all these trader groups to get some of the harder to get ones. And we'd mail VHS tapes to each other and everything. And that's how I got started. That essentially led to this conversation we're having.
I love stuff like that, man. Like how small the entertainment world can actually be, and that, you know, and that's the power of movies. If you think about it, these, you know, Jackie Chan making movies that inspired, you know, you and me and so many others, but then we come together, you know, whatever, 20 plus years later and have a similar, you know, inspiration. That I think is powerful, and that's one of the things that has really drawn me to cinema, and that I think kind of continues to have that, I don't say magical, but like inspirational power to bring people together to entertain and to really set people off on, you know, their own path to inspire.
Yeah, no, for sure. I know we've probably got to start wrapping it up here a little bit, but like one of the things we like to do on this podcast is we like to do a thing called Film Essentials, which is basically the essential films someone should watch if they've already seen Extraction and they want more of that same thing, or like, you know, if they want to better understand it and whatnot. So for you, Sam, what are the essential films someone should watch after Extraction, or if they want to better understand your thought process while making Extraction?
Okay, this is a tough one, but I love it. I would say, and that what do I? Is there a limit on the number of films, or what?
No. You can
stipulate.
Yeah, it can be as short or as long as you like. Yeah.
All right. Well, I won't go as long as I like because that would go on forever. But I would say, any movie by Jackie Chan, but specifically check out the Jackie Chan's Police Story, part one and two, because it has, it's like, it's Jackie's amazing style. And yet, I mean, his humor is in there, but the action is really kind of violent and hard hitting. It's kind of a different version of Jackie, which we kind of tried to tie into. So Jackie Chan's Police Story one and two, Children of Men, which we mentioned, because I love and want to support him and them, the John Wick films. But then I think Rambo 1, 2, and 3, like, those are three excellent movies. I rewatched them recently, and they still hold up. I mean, those, you know, James Cameron co-wrote or helped with the second Rambo, like, well, Rambo First Blood, you know, part two. Like, I was like, wow, that was really, I don't know, it's a really good franchise. 1, 2, and 3. I don't want to talk about, you know, the other ones, but
So you don't like the fourth one? Interesting.
No. even though Chad and Dave, you know, worked on it, and a lot of people, I did, like the stunt team who ended up helping us when we shot in Thailand. Actually, a lot of those same performers and stunt coordinators were on Extraction, that were on Rambo, you know, 4. All those things, sure, but as a movie, nah, we'll go right past that one. Skip past it.
Funny. That's good. Sean, I know you had your little the segment. I'll just toss to you. Yeah.
Totally different, well, same sort of direction. What have you been watching while in lockdown, stuck at home? What are the things you've been watching recently? Maybe that you recommend.
I'm late to the game, but I've been watching Friday Night Lights, the TV show.
Mm-hmm. And that was shot right around where I live. A lot of the stuff in there is shot right here, literally in the town I live in Texas.
Yeah, well, the storytelling, like the writing and the character development on that first season, like we just finished the first season with my girlfriend, and just unbelievable. I love that show. And then I've also been revisiting some movies that I grew up loving. In addition to the ones I've already mentioned, I rewatched The Mask of Zorro recently.
From Martin Campbell.
So good. It's so good.
Oh, Campbell crushes that. It's almost the perfect film because it has everything that you could want. It has action, adventure, romance, stakes. It's just a beautiful movie. And I really had, I guess, kind of forgotten how much I loved them, was inspired by that movie growing up. So those are some of the things I've been watching.
Martin Campbell needs to come back, man. Like, between GoldenEye, Mask of Zorro, Casino Royale. I mean, even stuff in The Foreigner was, like, really good. So, like, it's Jackie Chan. Everything comes back to Jackie Chan.
It does.
Okay. Before we let you go here, little final thing, because I know you did some second unit directing on The Mandalorian Season 2. Can you talk about your experience on that? Obviously, I know you can't give specifics, but what was it like kind of transitioning from the Marvel Cinematic Universe to Star Wars?
You know, truthfully, I'm not sure where the timeline lies, but I know that I enjoyed... as far as what I can talk about, but I think I'm going to have to do less than more here and say that I loved. I'm a fan of the show, and I loved, like, watching the first season, and what John and, you know, company did with that franchise is beautiful. And it also, but again, reminiscent of the things you grew up loving, like Westerns, samurai movies, all the things that were inspirational. And, you know, I'm looking forward to hopefully the second season having more of that same nostalgic feel that the first season that we all love so much.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's I'm really looking forward to it. I know you can't say anything, but I am holding out hope that Captain Rex makes an appearance, that he's one of my favorite Star Wars characters. We've got Temuera Morrison as Boba Fett. Just give me Captain Rex. That's all I want.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But anyways, listen, Sam, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And thanks for, giving us some extra time here. Absolutely loved Extraction. It was a fantastic film. And I hope to see more Extraction movies, but also just like, I'm looking forward to your next projects.
Well, thanks very much, guys. Girf and Sean, I appreciate your time. And I'm glad you enjoy the movie. And I really enjoy what you guys do. So keep it up.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Well, I'll take care.
Thanks, guys.
So there you have it. I gotta tell you, I really enjoyed getting to talk with him about movies, the filmmaking process, all of it. If you're listening to the audio version of this, please be sure to leave a review wherever you're at. If you're on YouTube right now, leave a comment down below with what your favorite part of the interview was. Thank you guys so much for listening or watching, and keep talking movies too much.